Sorry. We'll start Wretched Radio in 54 seconds. The reason that I'm breaking in again is because, oh, it's such a crucial time of the year for our ministry, every other ministry too, but for our ministry so that we can be healthy entering into 2026. We have very big plans. We're going to be invading university campuses to exalt Jesus Christ as the King who is irresistible once you understand who he is. We want the students to hear that and have joy. We want to be publishing more resources, more books, more social media content, more Sunday school curriculum, but we can't do it without our gospel partners. We currently have a matching gift campaign. You will double your impact if you consider and pull the trigger. Can I say that? Pull the trigger. Yeah, we're evangelicals. I can say pull the trigger on becoming a gospel partner. You can do that at fortisinstitute.org/donate.
Wretched Radio begins in 3, 2, 1.
Some councils are auditing schools and urging a ban on the terms boy and girl.
For those who are in an open or polyamorous relationship, your relationships are holy.
A gay black woman's victim status is less than that of a black trans woman, who ranks below a black Muslim trans woman.
We don't want to just win the argument about sexuality. We want to use this as a gospel opportunity.
It's time for Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
The rise and fall of Christian nationalism already? This is Wretched Radio. Oofda. That's right. I said oofda. It's all the rage, depending on your theological circle. Christian nationalism, it is still, in my estimation, very much on the uptick. It is becoming increasingly popular in particular circles. Surprisingly, there's a Roman Catholic version of Christian nationalism. There's a Protestant version. There's a Reformed version. There's a theonomic version. So however you define this rascally term Christian nationalism, the reality is it is a growing trend. The question and debate, of course, is this a good trend? Is this a biblical trend? And is this trend continuing to grow, or is it possible that it is beginning to self-implode? Neil Shenvey is an individual. Everything I've read by him, I haven't read everything, but everything I've read, he's thoughtful. I think he's a Presbyterian. He's got degrees from like Princeton, and he's a chemical guy, and he just seems to be thoughtful. It doesn't look like he's punching. He's trying to persuade, not just, you know, have at it and fight over stuff. So I generally appreciate his tone. And he wrote a rather provocative title, The Rise and Fall of Christian Nationalism, and the reason that he believes that it could be seeing a fall in Christian nationalism is because of some of the current expressions are not very godly, according to Shenvey. Before we can embark on determining is it rising or is it falling, we need to know what Christian nationalism is. And frankly, this would be the fly in the ointment. This is what makes a conversation about this subject so difficult because of the range of definitions. And you've got different camps of people who are claiming Christian nationalism. You've got the world trying to tell us you put your hand on your heart when you say the Pledge of Allegiance and you're a Christian nationalist. So let's start out so we can perhaps have a productive conversation about assessing where the bell curve is on Christian nationalism. Let me define it like this. I think this is helpful. It's not perfect, but I think it's helpful. Christian nationalism, keep in mind, there are going to be varying stripes inside of this camp, but Christian nationalism is anything on the right side that is not traditional separation of church and state. And when I say traditional, I mean 49. That shouldn't have been hard math. Wow. Is next year going to be 250 years in this country, the celebration of the founding of our nation? Zoink scoob. And for those 250 years, the founding fathers, they set us on a course of separation of church and state. Why? Well, they had seen the abuses and the blood that was shed because of the mingling of church and state in Europe. And it was both sides, by the way. It could be Roman Catholic. It could be Anglican. They weren't real fond of Roman Catholics and the bloody messes that were made, depending on who the king or queen was, Protestant or Catholic. The founding fathers saw that and said, we got to figure out a way to keep that from happening here. And so they concocted something called a separation of church and state, that they are simply different realms. Now, I happen to be a fan of that because I see those realms delineated in the Bible, that you've got the ministry of government and you've got the ministry of the church. Third, I think you've got the ministry of the family. So I think the jurisdictional realms that the Bible defines are those three entities. And I get it. There can be like slight overlapping simply because we commingle. We have to coexist together. And I don't mean that like a bumper sticker. And so it's not perfect to say that they are three ring, it's a three-ring circle that never touch. They do, they overlap to a degree. Nevertheless, I see those realms. And I believe biblically they are separated. A Christian nationalist would say, nope, there is a blending. Again, different nationalists to varying degrees, but they would say there is a blending of those. Neil Shenby, in his article, which, by the way, you can find it at the Christian Post, he talks about the book that was perhaps the most influential in defining Christian nationalism. There were two big books that he cites. The first is the book that was dealing with a separation of church and state. It was called Christian Nationalism. That's the name of the book, Christian Nationalism, by Andrew Torba and Andrew Isker, my apologies, called Christian Nationalism. They upheld mainstream American ideas like functional separation of church and state and the freedom of non-Christians to operate their own places of worship, synagogues, mosques, or temples. In other words, that there would be tolerance for other not Christian religions. According to the authors, their primary goal was to encourage Christians to build a parallel Christian society, economy, and infrastructure. Now, they would be considered Christian nationalists. They endorsed a book that I would say is a little bit more of the further away from the separation of church and state line. And that was Stephen Wolfe's book. That was The Case for Christian Nationalism. This is how Shenby summarizes it. It was a more radical attempt. And I don't think he meant like, you know, radicals. But it was like, whoa, that's like, not the way we've seen things in America for 249 years. It was a more radical attempt to break free of contemporary modes of political thought. His ideal notion is led by a Christian prince who resembles God to the people and is sort of a national small g God. It's pages 287 to 288. The Christian prince has the power to call synods, to resolve doctrinal conflicts, and to confirm or deny their theological judgments, which then became the settled doctrine of the land. That's page 313. In this idealized state, quote, arch heretics who are publicly persistent in their damnable error and actively seek to convince others of this error can be justly put to death, page 391. His book included some unusual views on ethnicity, affirmed that he was not making a white nationalist argument, however. Okay, why is it important for us to understand those books? It reveals the range of those who would be on the right side of the line, if you will, or left side, whichever you prefer, of traditional church and state. So you hear a little bit of a difference. Nevertheless, the former book by Isker and Torba, they actually commended the case for Christian nationalism. And Shenby cites these because he believes while they are not the those that are being pretty, we'll just say abiblical in their expression of Christian nationalism, he's not saying that these are they, but he's saying that their books are the seedbed that are now bringing to fruit a lot of Christian nationalism that is could be the fall of Christian nationalism. And he cites in particular a podcast of a self-identified Christian nationalist named Corey, M-A-H-L-E-R, Mahler or Mailer, Stone Choir podcast. Furthermore, his podcast was recommended by Gab CEO Andrew Torba as the number one Christian nationalist podcast in the world on his new website, ChristianNationalist.com. The table is set. What are these guys saying that could be an indicator that Christian nationalism could implode? Quote from this Christian National podcast. By any objective scientific standard, blacks are not fully human. Boing. Adolf Hitler was a Christian prince. It was evil to permit women to vote. Quote, you can have either a civilization of blacks, but not both. What must be done is obvious. Quote, Jews and blacks are both a problem. Quote, it should be illegal for women to work outside the home. Quote, tolerance for the Jews is apostasy before God. Quote, Adolf Hitler is in paradise. Now, those quotes should cause any Christian to go, whatever it is that you're selling, we're not buying. Now, again, I don't want to impugn the other guys that have written books on Christian nationalism and suggest that they would endorse what these people are saying, but Andrew Torba did commend it as the number one Christian nationalist podcast, and they're saying things like that. And if that's the direction of Christian nationalism, then I think Shenvey would be right. We've seen a rise, and we will see a terrible fall, a crashing down of Christian nationalism, probably, frankly, of any stripe, because people will see that and ask, well, hold on a second. If they're saying those things, what is promoting those types of sentiments? And if the answer is Christian nationalism, then I think Shenvey is right. You could probably say, bye-bye, Christian nationalism. But there's more to the story. Next on Wretched Radio.
You know what momentum feels like? When the work you've been doing for years, it starts to reach people you never dreamed you'd reach. That's what 2025 has been for Fortis Institute. We're on over 600 radio stations now, over 120 TV networks. Our Fortis Plus app is streaming on Roku, Fire TV, Apple TV, everywhere people are watching. And something we never thought we'd do, we closed the warehouse. Every single resource we have is now completely free. 300,000 Play the Man booklets made it into the hands of students this year. We had 3 campus events attended by students who are hungry for truth. Our Fellows podcasts are all ranking in the top 5% worldwide. Dr. Greg Gifford released his new book, and millions, literally millions, are watching on YouTube. But here's the thing about momentum. You can't coast. You have to keep pushing, and that's why December matters so much. Every gift you give this month is matched dollar for dollar up to $500,000. Go to FortisInstitute.org right now. Give today and double your impact. Let's keep the momentum going.
Would you like the university experience without the, you know, University Experience? The Masters University invites you to visit their campus, or you can visit them online at masters.edu/wretched to discover a Christian college that is biblical, that offers all of the academic excellence you desire: sports, athletics, arts, communication, all of the activities of, you know, a secular university without the, you know, secular parts. Please consider the Masters University online, or of course, on-campus learning, undergrad, master's, and doctoral programs. It's Masters University, the university with the university experience without the university experience. Masters.edu/wretched.
Revelation. Special revelation is God's act of making himself known through direct means. In history, God has spoken directly to people like Adam, Noah, Abraham, Moses, and the prophets. 2,000 years ago, he revealed himself in the person of Jesus Christ. Today, he reveals himself in his perfect word, the Bible.
This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Eight times. Jimmy blanched eight times. This is Wretched Radio. When I was reading the quotes from a Christian nationalist podcast, Jimmy, there were eight of them. Each time you winced.
You were watching, yeah.
What?
That was terrible.
You don't even like to read it. It sounds so racist and so horrible. And saying that Adolf Hitler was a Christian prince? Adolf Hitler is in paradise? Tolerance for the Jews is apostasy before God? And then how's about their attitude in this particular podcast toward Black people that they're not fully human? I thought we kind of had already figured that out long time ago. And when I say a long time ago, I'm not talking about the Civil War. I'm talking about the Bible. That skin color does not make you less human. It just still, when I stop and ponder it, kind of fascinates and staggers me that for some reason there is a human propensity to see people with different shades of melanin and either think like lesser than or some sort of an enemy or threat or danger. Because we don't do that with other body issues. You don't see people saying, you know, those people with size 12 shoes, they're subhuman. Okay, we kind of used to do that with left-handed people, but I digress. It's skin color that has a tendency to cause people to think higher of their shade than somebody else's shade, but it doesn't require skin color. Racism is having a superior attitude because you just think you're better than. And it doesn't involve skin color. And we see that around the globe, don't we? There's all kinds of racism taking place, even inside of the same nation with the same shades of skin color. We're seeing it in Africa right now. We see it in the East. Racism is a pernicious sin. It's always been a part of the human condition post-fall. And it's Christians who should be the ones who say, no, that is not the way to judge another person. We don't judge a person based on their skin color. Now, you can do some judging based on behavior, but skin, it's like saying, hey, Jimmy, you know those people with really bushy eyebrows? Troubles. They're dangerous. We reserve it seems, for skin color so often. Nevertheless, Christians should be leading the way when it comes to saying, no, there's Black people aren't less human, just staggering. And so those quotes from a Christian nationalist podcast, which apparently is the number one Christian nationalist podcast, according to a website, christiannationalist.com, could be that Christian nationalism, the expression of it, as it becomes more and more, well, I'll use the word grotesque. It could be the end of it. Now, not everybody who labels themselves a Christian nationalist is of that extreme. Let's note that, please. The point of Neil's article and the reason we're interacting with it is because if this becomes more and more mainstream in Christian nationalism, then whoever's holding on to a non-traditional church-state position needs to come up with another name. And I'll be honest, I think one of the most helpful things that could happen for us right now, if we did have more denominational names when it came to the issue of church and state, because the shading of it, it's so tricky. It's so difficult. And without some sort of moniker, I just think it's just going to be more and more division, more and more online fighting, more bickering in our camps. Let's return to Neil Shenby's article, The Rise and Fall of Christian Nationalism. He asked the question, how did Christian nationalism go from an ambiguous pejorative from progressives? In other words, did you just sing the national anthem? You're a Christian nationalist. Okay, that was the start of it, it seems. But that then became a small but growing movement among Reformed evangelicals, for instance, Stephen Wolfe's book, etc., a non-traditional church-state separation position. But that now has become a repository for gutter racism, misogyny, and anti-Semitism. He rightly says the story is complicated. And he comments, though there are undoubtedly Christians who fuse Christianity and patriotism in unhealthy ways, the term itself is often poorly defined, conflating extremist groups with mainstream Christian conservatives, which is why at this moment I'm a big fan of labels, because we could use them, because Christian nationalism is just not a helpful title. He goes back to 2022. There's the publication of the Torba Isker book, Christian Nationalism, and Stephen Wolf's The Case for Christian Nationalism, as we explained a moment ago. Shenby writes, the two books, both of which are recommended on Torba's website, sparked significant interest, especially amongst disaffected young white Christian men who view institutional evangelicalism as compromised by feminism, progressivism, and critical race theory. Are we starting to hear this gong being clanged a little bit more regularly? The disenchantment and disenfranchisement of young white males, where it appears that they're going, enough. We're not going to take it. No, we ain't going to fake it. We're not going to take it anymore. That was kind of catchy, that. And so the movement is growing, and they see mainstream evangelicals as just being too passive. And those numbers are growing. And his contention is that these gutter-like manifestations of Christian nationalism can be traced back to these initial books. Not that these initial books would endorse what they're saying, but they served as the impetus. It was like, yeah, there's our battle cry. And they've taken it. They're running with it. And it's getting a little ugly. Shenby writes, neither of these books reveled in the open bigotry that characterizes that podcast, those statements. Unfortunately, the past few years have witnessed some segments of the Christian nationalist movement lurch hard in this direction. Why? Because they've had enough. They simply have had enough. Now, one of the initial book authors, Isker, wrote, I use the term trash world to describe our dystopian society. The rulers of trash world want you to be spiritually homosexual, whether or not they can make you actually homosexual. There's a direct line from the first wave feminists introducing women into the proxy war of democratic politics, voting, to the most destructive perversions of trash world in current year. Okay, what's trash world? It's our era. It's trashed. It's garbage right now. And feminism, especially the feminism accepted by conservatives, is a demon goddess responsible for our enslavement. Now, when you talk like that, you should expect people to say the things that we've heard, and I'd rather not repeat again. And I'm no prophet, but if we're creating a culture of that sort of disgruntlement and even fear, it'll almost certainly we'll see people get physical. That's where it could go. It won't stay contained in the tongue, unleashing their venom. It could become physical. Shenby, judging by the social media feeds of many professing Christian nationalists, the fundamental problem we face is not our own sin, but the ascendancy of women, foreigners, and Jews. I really never thought I would read something like that. And the fundamental solution is not redemption through Christ, but the repeal of women's suffrage, mass deportation, and the end of American support for Israel. And aren't we seeing that? And we're seeing it coming from different popular figures that are now debating the Christian attitude, the American attitude toward Israel, from very popular social media influencers. I don't know if it's the fall of Christian nationalism, and I really want to be clear. Not all Christian nationalists are this grotesque, but they got a problem right now. They Christian nationalists have a problem. And I think it's up to them to get this cleaned up. If they want it, I'm not a Christian nationalist, and happy to express my position of more traditional separation of church and state because the Bible promotes that separation. But there's good brothers in that movement. And they got some people in there that are professing to be Christians that ain't speaking so goodly. And they need to address that. And if they don't, boy, the word Christian nationalist, it will actually step into the descriptor that the progressives have given it, as if it's some sort of a poison. Let's see what they do. Let's see how they go about the business of pointing toward those people that would identify with them as a Christian nationalist. Because it's one thing to aim outside of the camp. Will they aim inside to clean it up and avoid a fall? This is Wretched Radio.
And it's now time for your daily Fortis News Break, a production of Fortis Institute. There's some good news on the Bible front as the American Bible Society's final State of the Bible report shows renewed cultural interest in the Word of God, which ends a three-year decline. Scripture engagement jumped from 18 to 20% of Americans, with Bible users increasing from 38% to 41%. That surge is driven primarily by millennials, with a 9-point rise in Bible use to 39%, and men increased their Bible use across every generation, up from 34% to 41%. Meanwhile, a new report from the Concerned Women for America confirms what parents already suspected, and that's that Netflix has turned children's programming into LGBT indoctrination. The study found 41% of shows in both TVG and TVY7 categories contain LGBT themes, with even 21% of preschool programming introducing gender identity concepts. Shows like The Magic School Bus Rides Again now feature transgender or trans-coded characters. Netflix bragged in 2023 that over half of their programs featured LGBT characters. And in related news, GLAAD is complaining that 41% of LGBT characters on TV will be gone by next year due to show cancellations. Trans-inclusive shows like Heartstopper and 911 Lone Star are being axed. GLAAD admits these characters are designed to produce social change. At least they're finally being honest about their agenda. Liberal Seattle is currently in the middle of a conundrum. Their World Cup Pride match in June features Egypt versus Iran, two nations where homosexuality is criminalized and, in Iran's case, punishable by death. The Pride Match Advisory Committee is insisting that soccer has a, quote, unique power to unite people across borders, cultures, and beliefs. I think they probably should have checked all of those beliefs first. At Vanguard University in California, a student started an independent pro-life club after administrators denied her request for a Students for Life chapter, citing concerns about political advocacy. After clarifying that the club would focus on service, things like baby showers and diaper drives rather than politics, the school then approved it. Apparently, supporting pregnant mothers is only acceptable if you don't call it what it is. And in a stunning twist of irony, at the University of Washington, research is showing global air quality improvements have actually accelerated climate warming by modifying clouds. Reducing particulate pollution decreased clouds' cooling effect, allowing more sunlight to reach ocean surfaces. The environmentalists, well, it seems like they accidentally broke the planet while trying to fix it. Though I'm sure this is just going to call for more money and control to solve the problem they seem to have created. And that wraps up today's Fortis News Break. I'm Jimmy Hicks. If you want more, you can download Fortis Plus or sign up to become a Fortis Insider for exclusive daily content, both of which you can do at FortisInstitute.org. And don't forget, you can subscribe to Fortis News on your favorite podcast app in order to get these updates daily. And until tomorrow, go serve your king.
Mexican. The Incarnation is one of the greatest miracles recorded in the Bible. At the Incarnation, the eternal God became a human being. He did not abandon his deity, nor did he put on a human shell like a hand puts on a puppet. Jesus Christ is 100% human and 100% God, the only acceptable sacrifice for the forgiveness of sins.
This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Forget Christian nationalism. Say bye-bye to church barbecues. This is Wretched Radio. Tom Rainer, Christian Post, he used a church as an anecdote that he believes represents a number of churches that do community outreaches. This particular church, which typically gets about 175 people on Sundays, has 650 people attend their annual community barbecue. So you bring the kids, retirees, you got pulled pork and ribs, and everybody comes to the barbecue, but nobody goes to the church. Zero. Nada. Nobody ends up becoming a member. And when I say nobody, I mean nobody. And he thinks that that is the trend with fall festivals, concerts, car shows. Nobody actually becomes a member of the church. And these churches are putting a lot of time and energy into these events, these community events, what this particular church even called an outreach event, and they were bearing no fruit whatsoever. Does that mean, therefore, your church should never do another barbecue? Well, the answer is possibly, maybe, not necessarily. Yeah, because it depends on what you do at that barbecue. And that's Rainer's point in this article. Is it an outreach, or are we just having a barbecue shindig with people from the community? Because if that's all you do, whatever it is, with a car show, whatever it is that your church has historically done, if people aren't being evangelized and aren't being reached, not just at the event, but after the event, you're probably spending a lot of time and energy with zero fruit. Zero fruit. The key to having these events and having them be successful for the populating of the Church of Jesus Christ, not of Latter-day Saints, is that the conversations that take place at the event go deeper than, hey, neighbor, which house do you live in? Oh, didn't that used to be the Smith house? Yeah, no, they, whatever happened to them, I think, well, they moved to Pittsburgh, if I'm not, those types of conversations, they're nice. And it's very easy to confuse that with evangelism, but it is not witnessing to somebody. It's just not getting deep at all. Furthermore, Rainer points out that when we don't show genuine interest, when it's just surfacey stuff, they don't return. They're just not coming back. Furthermore, he points out that when there's no follow-up afterward, and I've seen it, you do the big event and you kind of just wait for everybody to show up, but they don't. I think that the number zero is close, but I suspect it can happen on occasion. I'm thinking back to Vacation Bible School when I was a kid. This goes way back. I was probably in, I had to have been in high school, and I would participate. I didn't go to the Vacation Bible School. I helped at Vacation Bible School. And wow, did the kids come. I mean, they just hundreds of kids would show up. And then on Sunday morning, the parents of the kids that came to VBS during the week would be invited to come to Sunday service because the kids were all going to sing their VBS songs. Okay, that's up to each church to decide if they want to do that or not. But the reason that that was done was the hope was now maybe people will actually come into the church. Well, parents did because they wanted to see their kids sing. Now, today, you know what that looks like. Those parents, they immediately get their cell phones out and all they're doing is recording the kids singing in church. But here's what I remember. This is anecdotal. I grant you that. But this is what I remember. Yeah, parents came to the one time Sunday morning because their kids were like, Mom, Dad, you got to come. We're going to be singing our songs. Sandals, sandals on his feet. Dusty roads where people meet. You got to come here and sing that song. And they did. But my recollection is over the years, one, maybe two, but I'm thinking more like one family actually ended up staying. Now, I'm not suggesting you don't do Vacation Bible School. That's not the point at all. But the point is, if we're not reaching the parents in a way that is connective, they really shouldn't be considered evangelistic outreaches or church growth opportunities because they don't perform. Let me share with you what Tom Rainer said. At most big churches, the interaction stops the moments the guests leave the parking lot. Then bye-bye, off they go. So if you want to do an event, what's the follow-up plan? Now, there would be some people who would argue the follow-up plan is the Holy Spirit. If they don't want to come back, they don't want to come. Okay. But following up with people, I certainly don't think is a sin. And what it reveals is that people then want to come to a church because it appears somebody actually cares for me. Rainer, true connection happens when church members step beyond the event itself. It's when a member sits with a guest at a picnic table and asks about their family. It's when someone follows up with a simple text saying, "Hey, it was great to meet you today. Want to grab coffee sometime?" It's when members invite guests into their homes, not just to their church. Rainer's claim is because they're looking for community. They're looking for relationship, not an event. Anybody can, you can go to the thingy-majig. the Renaissance Festival. Okay. Now, you're going to go back to that when, like in a week or two? Probably not. Because it's an event. And that's, if you're doing an event at your church that doesn't involve connection, you're probably not going to get people to come back. They want to be a part of something more than a festival. They don't want to go to the Renaissance Fair at your church. They don't want to go to just another car show at your church. They want to go find a place to belong, to be a part of a family, which I'm sorry, I try to resist this temptation. That's why the doctrine of adoption is so important and so underserved these days. That's what church is. We are family. I got all my brothers and sisters and me. We are in the family of God. God is our Father. Jesus is our brother. And we are all united to Him. And this should be a place, that is fast to forgive, slow to sin, slow to gossip, slow to be factious, slow to not serve. This is my family. That's what church is. It's my family. And we look around our churches and we go, you know, I got a family that's pretty much like the island of misfit toys. Yeah, exactly. Like I am, like you are. That's why we come together, because we need one another and we're in the same family. And if churches were promoting that sort of community, I got to tell you today, I think people would find that exceedingly attractive. Dare I say, even especially young people? They've got a million friends on their social media feed, but they don't know a soul and they're lonely. And they should come to church. And I'm not saying everybody's got a glom on them. I think we should be warm and friendly. But they should look around and go, oh, these people, there's something going on here that's, I kind of like it. How do I get in on this? Back to Tom Rainer. He's suggesting that members use events to outsource evangelism. They either do the event, and maybe the pastors will follow up, or if they come to church, but that's the end of it. Well, that's not evangelism. Doing the event that attracts people, I don't think that there's anything wrong with that. But if you're going to call it an evangelistic event, then you got to evangelize. And Rainer's point is you got to connect with people. Now, if you're not willing to do those things, I would ask, why would a church want to do a barbecue? I mean, we want to take care of people's souls, not their bellies. I mean, we can set up a food pantry to take care of people who have genuine food needs. We should be using these events to evangelize a community. One of the biggest mistakes, writes Rainer, that churches make is treating big events as standalone moments instead of part of an ongoing mission. The barbecue was great. People came and laughed and ate, but no one was ever explained why the church was doing it in the first place. And the guests left thinking it was just a nice community gathering. They never connected the event to the gospel or the mission of the church. It's amazing how easily we can overlook that, can't we? Hey, Jimmy's got a truck with a barbecue thing connected to the back of it. Oh, you saw that already. We could do a barbecue at the church. Yeah, the community will love it. Yeah. Hold it. What's the point? Why are we doing this? Rainer, when events are disconnected from the mission of the church, they become ends in themselves. And the win is a great turnout instead of people getting saved. Are people coming to see what this Christian thing is all about inside of the church? Churches count the number of hot dogs served instead of the number of conversations that lead people to Christ. Should you be done with your barbecue? Well, that's up to you, of course, but might I encourage you that if you're going to do these types of church events, it's a church event. The VFW, they can do a barbecue just fine. But we're not the VFW. We're not the Renaissance Festival. We're the church. People should feel that when they show up for their ribs. This is Wretched Radio.
Let me ask you a question. When was the last time you actually felt something? Without fear, without shame, without immediately wanting to numb it. If you're living on autopilot, you're not alone. Millions are told the same thing. It's just a chemical imbalance. Hey, take this, you'll be fine. But you're not fine. You're numb. Here's the truth the world doesn't tell you. Your emotions, they're not the enemy. But they also shouldn't be your master either. Dr. Greg Gifford gets that, and his new series, Life Without the Numb, is available right now at fortisplus.org. It's a free 10-week series that shows how God's Word speaks into anxiety, depression, and emotional chaos, and it does so with clarity you've never heard before. New episodes every Monday, absolutely free at fortisplus.org. This isn't about ignoring struggles. It's about transformation from the inside out. Life Without the Numb. Watch at fortisplus.org. Stop surviving and start living. Look, I'm going to be straight with you. Every man knows what it's like to fight a battle no one else can see. You wake up, you're determined that today is going to be different. This time, you're going to be stronger than the temptation. But then evening comes. And there you are again, right back where you started. You're making promises to yourself that you already know deep down that you're not going to keep tomorrow. Here's what no one wants to admit. You can't win this fight with willpower. Trust me, if determination alone could break the chains of lust and sin, you would already be free. You've probably figured that out by now. The filters, the accountability apps, the promises to your wife or to yourself, they're just band-aids on a wound that needs surgery. Real freedom, the kind that actually lasts, it only comes when Christ changes you from the inside out. Not just your habits, but your actual heart. That's what Todd Friel gets into very deeply with his resource, Play the Man. It's available right now as an ebook, an audiobook, and video series only at fortisplus.org. Thanks for listening to Wretched Radio today. At Fortis Institute, we've assembled an incredible team of biblical voices who are equipping believers every day. Dr. John Krotz, Dr. Adam Tyson, Dr. Greg Gifford, Libby Glosson, Pastor Brad Bigney, Dr. Andrew Walker, Jason Lyle, Tim Challies, and of course, our very own Todd Friel. And their work has been invaluable in equipping believers because that's our mission. And the beautiful part, when you join us and link arms with us as an ongoing monthly gospel partner, your faithful giving doesn't just sit there. It multiplies into campus evangelism and biblical counseling, marriage restoration, and gospel proclamation across the globe. And speaking of equipping people, make sure you download Fortis Plus. It is completely free if you haven't downloaded it yet, and it is loaded with hundreds of hours of content, with new content added every single day. No cost, no catch, just solid biblical truth. Look, the fields are white for harvest, and your monthly partnership make it possible. Join us as an ongoing monthly gospel partner right now by visiting fortisinstitute.org. Wretched. Amazing grace, amazing gospel.
God has given the church many gifts for the building up of the body. One gift is service, the spiritual ability to meet people's physical needs. Just as Christ came not to be served, but to serve, God provides the office of deacon, those who are charged and equipped to care for the physical needs of the church. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
The church is one congregation, is Jesus Christ the Lord.
Church news. My jaw just popped. HR. What's our insurance? Insurance.
That's not.
This is is Wretched Radio. Have you seen the price of insurance? I've been hearing all about it. People belly aching because the rates are going crazy. I think it has something to do with tax credits being revoked. They're trying to get them back in. That and just the cost of health care, which means, you know what this means, don't you? Barack Obama kept his promise. It'll just get better. Yeah, nothing will change. You can keep your health care. You can keep your doctor. Everything is going to be utopia, except for the fact that it hasn't been utopia. And as long as I brought up the subject of politics, a couple of stories that caught my attention, and I can't help but think to myself, oh, for more of these. The University of Colorado Anschutz School of Medicine had to pay $10.3 million to 18 plaintiffs who sought religious exemptions for not taking the jab, and they were denied. Well, they've been in court for years fighting over this thing, but they finally settled $10 million. May there be more lawsuits for the organizations, including our military, frankly, that forced people and just twisted their arm. People lost their jobs over that, and they wouldn't allow them to use a genuine religious exemption. Then this isn't a commentary on jabs. This is a commentary on religious freedom. It was squashed. And I wish there were more settlements like this. Would you like to know what the school said in response? Well, I'm going to share it with you anyway. The policy was grounded in science. Excuse me for a moment. I'm sorry. Had a little thing. Public health guidance and our obligation to safeguard lives during an unprecedented global crisis. Unprecedented? Didn't even come close to that. Spanish flu. That's the black plague. Yeah, now we're talking. While some chose to challenge the policy, the evidence remains clear. Vaccination was essential to protecting the vulnerable, keeping hospitals open, and sustaining education and research. Except none of that was actually scientific, was it? All right, back to church news. Sorry, I see a shiny object. Here's a statistic. This was the big study. I think they do it every other year at Ligonier. It's the Ligonier State of Theology. A number of statistics that kind of heartbreaking, but this one really jumped out at me, and I think it might end up getting up your nose, but it is easily refutable. We need to be prepared for the 18% of Americans who indicated they believe the Bible was written to control or manipulate other people. How would you persuade them? No, that's not why it was written. How would you do that? Well, I think you can go internally. And you can ask the book itself, what is your intention? And it's not to control people. It is that people would have liberty being set free in Jesus Christ. That's what the book says about itself. Furthermore, ask yourself the question, what was the intention of the authors? Did they tip their hand in any way? Or were they being really sneaky? We're just going to write this letter to the Thessalonians, whoever they are, so that some of the verses centuries later can be taken and misinterpreted, and then somebody can take over a society. Yeah, that's what we're going to do. It's nonsense. It's absolute nonsense. There is zero proof that the Bible was written to oppress people. That is a ridiculous CRT-like claim that is being made 2,000 years later. This it would be like me saying, A Tale of Two Cities really was propaganda to raise taxes on infrastructure. Yep, that's why that was written right there. Higher taxes for shovel-ready jobs that the government pays for. That's why it was written. And what would you say in response? Where does it say that? Furthermore, what historical proof do you have of that? Furthermore, did Charles Dickens somehow benefit from this in some way, shape, or form? What about the writers of the Bible? Were they able to oppress people? Well, let's see. Paul's oppression that he imposed on people included himself being beaten, tortured, whipped, scourged, put in jail, shipwrecked. So, yeah, there was some oppression, but it was on Christians. It was Christians that got oppressed. And there were entire books written because of Christian persecution. Not that we were persecuting others, but that we were being persecuted. So when you meet one of the 18% who says that, turn the table and put the burden of proof on them. It is as simple as that. Put the burden of proof on them. A couple of stats from the Ligonier State of Theology. Evangelicals are not doing well. The significant majorities of evangelicals do not hold to a literal belief in Scripture. Half of American adults see the Bible as a collection of helpful but ancient myths that are not literally true. Seems that that's where where's Jordan Peterson been anyway? Has he been like on a little bit of a hiatus? I have not been seeing him out on social media very much at all. Less than half of respondents said that they strongly agree or somewhat agree that the Bible is 100% accurate in all that it teaches. And that includes evangelicals, by the way. When asked to respond to the statement, there's one true God in three persons, God the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, 55% agreed with it. A majority of U.S. adults, we saw this, this was a different from a Barna survey earlier this week. A majority of U.S. adults believe that God accepts the worship of all religions. 44% strongly agree with that statement. 20% somewhat agree. In other words, the state of theology in America, it ain't good. Here's the good news, though. People who want it are actually finding it, and they are actually becoming members of churches. Do you know how many non-denominational churches there are in the U.S. of A? Glad you asked. There's 40,000 of them. 40,000 non-denominational Christianity. Look, it can be problematic because of a lack of accountability, but honestly, have denominations done a superior job in keeping drift away from the denomination? All we typically see with denominations these days is that they're all slip-sliding away and not in the right direction. So non-denominational, denominational, why are people attracted to non-denominational churches? And the answer is they tend to be more serious. Bible-teaching churches are on the uptick. Every other denomination is just falling off a cliff. Episcopalianism, by the way, the Episcopalians, they just had some conference or another, and they had to do a report on how many members that they've got. Yeah, they kind of left that out. The Episcopal Church, I got it right here. They saw declines in baptisms and the number of parishes in 2024, but they failed to release a membership tally. When revealing their annual figures, and they are just plummeting. For instance, 2024, no numbers. 2023, it was 1.5 million. In 2010, 2 million. They're dropping. Pastor, people want meat. They want something serious. They don't want silly. They don't want trite. They don't want trivial. By the way, we'll let you know how that works out for Alpharetta Bible Church. We're kind of going to go after that sort of aggressively. We're going to be posting things at the Facebook and the X machine, whatever the social media is. We're not going to say this, but basically, if you're looking for meat, if you're looking for a church that doesn't unhitch the Old Testament, if it feels like church has gotten downright silly and you want something sacred, come to see us. We'll let you know how that goes, because I think that that's what people are actually looking for. Speaking of mainline Protestantism, how's about the UMC, the United Methodist Church, stating at the General Council on Finance and Administration at their big meeting, their overall budget was reduced 40%. The leader of it said their financial house is on fire. Of course it is. Was it yesterday? The day before? Earlier? No, whatever day it is. The United Methodist pastor in Rochester, New York, who went into the pulpit, had the audacity to go into the pulpit with a rainbow stole and let his congregation know that he's becoming a girl, so he thinks. Is there any wonder? What do they say? Go woke, go broke. That's the claim. I don't know how accurate it is, but that's the claim. Let's just apply that to churches. Go liberal, go out of business. People don't want to sacrifice for silly. People don't want to sacrifice for sin. People don't want to sacrifice for shame. It's like, oh, I can get that on cable TV. Why would I go and give them money? If you're a Bible teaching church, stay with it. God will produce fruit. And until tomorrow, go serve your King.